everybody. Welcome to the Orange Kids Podcast, where we talk about the big ideas of kids ministry and discuss practical solutions to our week-to-week challenges. My name is Mike, and today I am joined by Gina.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Gina?
I'm good, too. Kind of early in the day.
Good to see you. It is a little bit early when we're recording this podcast. Now, normally, Gina, I would say, I'm joined today by Gina, and you would say, hey, and I was like, and Kellen. And Kellen would be like, what's up? But Kellen's not here today.
He's not here today.
It's a sad day. Kellen is busy. He is just off doing amazing things. He is actually at some churches speaking, and so trying to get him in here when we record this thing live. It just couldn't work out today, which is a bummer, but we are going to press on, Gina,
because
we can carry the load. Kellen is here in spirit with us to do that.
The ditty is going to have to happen in spirit as well.
The ditty. At the end of the episode, the ditty is coming to Gina today.
No,
it's going to be great.
I draw the line at the ditty.
One day, Gina, we're going to get you to do a ditty to do that. Ditty. I promise you. So anyways, okay. So today on the podcast, I'm excited about our episode today and our guest today. And we're going to talk about something that maybe normally we don't really talk about on the podcast, in the history of our podcast, the long history of 20,
the
longevity over the course of this year to do that. But we're going to talk about the subject of worry and anxiety. And I don't know about you, Gina, but when it comes to that subject, I know it's there.
Sure.
Because I have it.
Yeah.
And I know it's in my kids, but I don't feel like qualified to like speak on this. So that's why I'm super excited about our guest today. Sissy Goff is joining us today. Hi, Sissy. How are you?
I'm good. Glad to be with y'all.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And for our listeners, if you're like, hey, who's Sissy? Let me tell you just a little bit about Sissy. Sissy has worked as the director of child and adolescent counseling at Daystar Counseling Ministries in Nashville, Tennessee since 1993. And she has a master's degree from Vanderbilt University. And Sissy, Gina, I don't know if you know this, but Sissy has like a third of the alphabet behind her name when you write it out.
Because
I was like, Sissy Goff,
M-E-D-L-P-C-M-H-S,
and I had to look it up. I'm going to be honest with you. I had to look it up because I didn't know, but it's Master's of Education degree, licensed professional counseling with mental health service provider designation.
Impressive.
Very.
Man.
It just means I had to take a lot of tests.
A lot of tests. Oh, it's hilarious. So Sissy speaks to parents and children's ministers across the country, is the author of several books, including Are My Kids on Track? And her newest book, Raising Worry-Free Girls and Braver, Stronger, Smarter. So Sissy, again, thank you so much for joining us today. And we're just going to jump into the conversation. Does that sound good?
Sounds great.
Everybody good? All right. So here's where we're going to start, Sissy, is if I'm a ministry leader, if I'm going to be honest for a second, of all the things that I have to do on a week-to-week basis to prepare for Sunday morning, of getting curriculum ready and finding volunteers, getting supplies set up, doing all the, like, there's just a lot that I already have to do. Why, as a ministry leader, of all the things that I have to do on a week-to-week basis in prepping for Sunday, from getting volunteers to going through curriculum to getting supplies ready to all the things I have on my to-do list, why is it that we should be talking about this subject of worry? And because the question might be is to say, worry is just something that's a part of our everyday world and every kid worries, right? So isn't this just phase, or is this just a trend, or is this whole thing of worry and anxiety an epidemic? Like, what would you say to that? What are the statistics saying out there in regards to worry, in regards to anxiety?
I love that question. And because I think it, you said, I mean, I've been counseling for 27 years, and I have not in the history of that time seen anything affect kids like anxiety and worry are today.
Wow.
And the statistics are now 1 in 4 kids, girls, are twice as likely to deal with anxiety as boys. And as a side note, if a parent deals with it, kids are 7 times more likely to struggle with it themselves. And and the thing, I think, even to your question specifically about why in ministry should I kind of stop and listen to how to help or what's going on. And really, honestly, some of that is because for a child to battle anxiety, it means, what I always tell girls in my counseling office is, it means they're really smart, they're really conscientious, they try hard. And so those kids are, honestly, they're going to be at church on Sunday morning because they don't want to miss. They don't want to disappoint their parents. They don't want to disappoint you.
Yeah.
And so they're going to show up. Whereas kids dealing with other more emotionally based issues may be so struggling so much they can't get out of bed and wouldn't come. But a kid with anxiety pushes themselves so hard, they're going to show up, and then they're going to have a panic attack under your watch, and you're going to feel like, I don't have any idea what to do. Or they're going to get debilitated in the moment, because it's not only an epidemic, but it's debilitating for so many kids. Yeah. And then they're going to sit in the corner and think, something's wrong with me, and be suffering in the silence. And so I really firmly believe any of us who are working with kids at this point need to have some degree of knowledge of not only what's happening, but how can I help? Because it's just facing so many of them.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, totally. And I think it might be helpful as we kind of start this conversation is, when you say worry, what is worry, and how is that different from anxiety, or is it just stress, or is it like fear? Like, how can we differentiate those things?
Well, I try and really think about it like a continuum from kind of worry to anxiety, because you were right. I think all kids deal with worry. I think all adults deal with worry, especially just if we're functioning at all. As a human, we worry to some degree to be able to move forward in life. It's what propels us a lot of times. And it travels along this continuum to anxiety. Another thing I would say, and this is a tangent we could talk about probably for a long time too, but I also believe we're living in this world of diagnosing kids, over-diagnosing kids now. And so the publisher, when we came up with a title for the book, I pushed hard against, I didn't want to call it Raising Anxiety-Free Girls. I wanted to call it Worry-Free, because I think we don't want kids in any way to define themselves by how they struggle. And so I really like to camp out on the word worry more than anxiety. But I would say the primary difference in the two is I do believe all kids struggle with worry off and on, and developmentally there are times when it's more significant. But what we're seeing happen is, I think for me, the definitive kind of marker is that, you know, we all pass through worry. We all have what are called intrusive thoughts of, you know, I hope I lock the door, to I hope nothing bad happens to this person I love. And for kids who battle with anxiety, and I'm not saying a diagnosis of clinical anxiety, but just anxiety is more of an emotion or a recurrent issue. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always tell kids it's like the one loop roller coaster at the fair, and they have this recurring thought and the rest of us would keep going. But for anybody who has a little bit of anxiety, the thought gets stuck in this loop and it goes around and around in their little heads and they can't figure out how to get it out. And the average age of onset of anxiety, we were seeing in research that it was 8. Now it's dropping down to 6, with seeing symptoms as young as 4 and 5. So little bitty ones are going to be dealing with it.
And it's interesting that you would say that, because as I read through your book, it seemed like, you know, as a ministry leader, it might be easier to recognize worry and anxiety in a middle schooler or a high schooler, right? But as it relates to...
Right, because they're going to be able to talk about it.
Okay, and you even talk about that, how we can we have a culture of diagnosis, you know. Or we will take we will label maybe what we're walking through and give it a diagnosis, and it may not actually be that, you know?
Right. Although I have to say, I think there are times that diagnoses are absolutely important.
Absolutely.
And so we want to allow for that when the child needs it, but we don't want to jump there.
Right. I'm glad you said that, because you're absolutely right. I think the big question that I moved to is, okay, if it shows up that early, if kids are showing signs of anxiety, of worry in a harmful way, is probably the best way I can put it, then if it's showing up at that young of an age, then as ministry leaders, you know, how do we, you know, we are not the only ones who get to interact with these students. In fact, we are relying, as Mike referenced earlier, you know, as a ministry leader, gosh, we're spending most of our time just making sure that our team is together for Sunday morning, that all of the I's are dotted and T's are crossed, and we're ready to open the doors and give kids a great experience that not only captures their attention, but teaches them hopefully something that is life-changing or eternity-changing. Like, this is our goal. And yet, to be aware that a good number of these kids that are walking through these doors could be somewhere on that continuum, you know? What are we teaching our small group leaders to watch for, to know or recognize that something might be happening that we need to pay attention to?
Yeah, and jumping in there real quick, like, I think some of the worry that kids have is, and I don't know if this is true or not, so help me out here, Sissy, is like, worry is attached to fear. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that fear is something kind of a one-time event. We're afraid of something, or like I'm afraid of spiders, but worry tends to hang around longer. It's kind of how much it lingers, I would say, is the difference between those.
Okay.
And so worry stays with a child more than fear.
That's good. That's helpful. So then if that's, again, so just to go back to that, the question, how does a ministry leader equip their small group leaders to, what do they watch for to know when there may be a need to lean in, you know, to ask some more questions, to get really curious about where that child is?
Well, I would say a couple of different things. I mean, often, again, we go back to the kids who, I mean, all kids have fears, like you were saying, Mike, and the child who worries, that would be more of the child that we need to have on our radar, that they might need extra help, is often not going to say those things.
Right.
And depending on the age of kids you're working with, middle school, high school, they will, which is great, because then we know how to work with it in a different way. But younger than that, it's going to manifest in a lot of different ways. And what I hear parents describe more is a lot of kids who especially have anxiety are more perfectionistic. I think any of us who are perfectionistic as adults, it's become our way to cope. Mm-hmm. But we maybe weren't in counseling when we were kids, so we didn't know how to use those words. So we just become perfectionistic. But
right.
So for those kids, a lot of times they'll start to struggle with tummy aches, that you'll see them, they'll have a headache when they get to the room. I mean, something physically is manifesting itself is one option. Another is they'll be tearier as they leave their mom and dad. There'll be something emotionally that you'll see more. I think a lot of times too, and again, girls and boys are probably different in terms of this, but girls, I mean, research says girls reserve their most negative emotions for home. And so with her, you may not really see it in the setting that we're talking about, but a lot of times both genders will become kind of explosive and you'll see these flashes of anger that won't make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be times of transition. You know, they have this one thing they're expecting, and then all of a sudden it switches to something else. I had two conversations this week in my counseling office with parents too. I think from their perspective, it looked a lot like manipulation from their kids, because it felt like the kids weren't getting what they wanted, which really it was more that the child, it wasn't happening what they expected. Yeah. And so it made them more anxious, just like if all of a sudden somebody changed your schedule and you had no idea that was going to happen. Mm. And so it throws them into the spin of then they don't know how to get out of a looping thought. And so I think we just, what I tell parents regularly is we want to look for what's underneath the behavior that's going on. Mm-hmm. And especially younger ones, they just don't have the words to say yet. Whatever just happened made me anxious.
Right.
And so we don't know how to help them work through it. So often.
It's as you share that. Gosh, this hits home for me in such a big way. My daughter she's walking through some really challenging things right now. But as I read through your book and even what you just described here, I can say, oh my gosh, we saw those things. Mm-hmm. We saw those things at you know, at 7, 8, 9 years old. We saw them, but we didn't know what they were, you know?
Right. Well, and research says kids often don't need help for the average time span of 2 years, because I think we don't know what it is.
And we think it's disciplinary.
Kids are such great kids that they're trying hard to keep it inside. And so we don't know.
Yeah. So let's say that a small group leader recognizes some of these signs and they feel like there may be an opportunity to lean in, or a ministry leader sees these signs, right? And there's an opportunity to lean in. Mm-hmm. How would you counsel us, you know, how would you counsel this audience and say, hey, if you feel like a conversation could be, there's an opportunity for a conversation with a parent, what are some good ways to navigate that conversation? Like where do they start? And then what questions would you say, hey, this is a great question to ask. And here's some questions I would say that's not going to help them.
Right.
Right.
Right. Well, okay. So insider scoop of what I would say in terms of counseling.
Awesome.
Is that because we're looking at this 7 times more likely situation, then the parent that you're approaching about a child potentially has anxiety himself.
Oh.
And the same things that we're describing about the child, they're trying hard, they're conscientious, all of those things, the parent is trying hard and conscientious. And so, and I think this is true. I think y'all would agree to this. Anyway, with parents, there is always this situation of you want the parent to feel like they know their child better, that you're looking to them as the authority on their child. If we act like we know more than a parent does, I think they're going to be less likely to jump on board whatever situation,
so
whatever thing we're suggesting, right?
That's so good.
And so I think to go to a parent, and I'm a perfectionist myself. And so I think always, if somebody has to say something hard to me, if they can give me the benefit of the doubt, I hear it a million times different.
Yeah.
And so to go to a parent with that in mind of, man, you know, it is harder than it's ever been to raise kids today. And I can't even imagine what you're up against with four kids or, you know, whatever, that we're starting with some kind of coming alongside statement where they feel like we get it from their perspective, or even that we're saying, you know, Susie is such a great kid and I watch her try so hard every day when I interact with her at church, or something where we're just saying, I get it. Yeah. I see you. You're trying hard. I just think whatever comes after is going to be heard differently. So starting in some place like that and then moving to, and I think it can even help to blame it on somebody else. I just heard somebody speak on this topic, or I read a book about this idea, because we're seeing so much more of it. Again, where it feels like we're not singling them out. We're not saying they're doing something wrong.
That's good.
But this is something going on, bigger picture. And I'm watching her start to struggle in a way that I feel like you would want to know. Where, again, we're circling back, giving them the benefit of the doubt. I think you'd want to know this before.
That's good.
And I'm watching her have a lot of tummy aches when she's around other kids. And I don't know if you're aware of that. I'm watching her get kind of stuck. And I think something may be happening inside of her that she's not saying out loud. And so I want to help figure that out with you. Just that we continue to have this voice where it sounds like we're coming alongside them and we're working towards the goal of getting the help.
I think that's good. I think that a ministry leader has the same advantage maybe that you have as, you know, as a counselor at Daystar, that if a parent is standing in front of you as a counselor at Daystar, one thing you can say is you can affirm them, just the fact that they're there.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, just the fact that you're there says speaks volumes to how much you care for your child, you know? And I think as ministry leaders, we can say the same thing.
That's a great place to start right there.
Just the fact that you're here, you know, it speaks volumes to how much you love your child, you know? And because the more we can, I love if we can affirm.
Yeah.
You know, if we can affirm parents, then that sets us up for, it increases the level of trust. It gives us a bridge of trust across to even, you know, move towards that conversation, because that's scary for a parent to even hint or suggest that there may be something more happening, you know, that we don't fully understand yet.
Definitely.
So that is really good. That's helpful.
I love one of the things you said in your book. You said trust is the antidote to worry, and that kids feel bravest when someone they love reminds them of the truth of who they are. And I didn't know if you could just speak to that just a little bit more about that. I love that quote. And the reason why I love that quote is you mentioned earlier, like when you approach a parent about their child and they're exhibiting worry or anxiety, if I have somebody approach me and I don't know who they are, they're a random volunteer, and they say, hey, we saw this in your child, right? That comes across differently than somebody who is invested in my kid. And one of the things that we talk about here at Orange all the time is that the greatest thing you can do to help a child fall in love with God is to put someone in their life who loves God to do that. And that's putting another trusted voice in their life, somebody who is consistently involved in their life. And that just comes across different when I have, like, my daughter at our church, her small group leaders, she has two of them, Natalie and Northy. I've been with her for 4 years now.
Yeah.
So the credibility and the trust that I have with them comes across differently when it's just another random voice showing up. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Yeah.
They're some of her people.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, but I love that line of trust is the antidote to worry, and kids feel bravest, like I said, when someone they love reminds them of the truth of who they are. And that is your small group leader, or whether that is you as the ministry leader, or again with the parent to do that. So I just thought that was really good. I love that part.
How have you seen that play out with kids that you've watched walk through this journey? Right, they deal with anxiety. It's a present everyday reality. How have you seen trust, and how have you seen another voice in that child's life? Right, which apparently, basically that's what you provide through counseling, is you provide another voice who oftentimes, I think you even said it in the book, we're not telling them anything different most of the time than what parents are telling them.
Right.
It's just, they're just hearing it in a different way because it's coming from a different voice. And so
right.
I think I would love to hear, have you maybe share a little bit more about why trust is such a significant factor there.
Well, I think, I mean, it's probably trust really on a lot of levels, and where I would start and where I would want the parents, what I would want the parents to move towards is trust in their child first, is because what we're seeing is parents and the person who approaches a parent, often that parent is aware of their own anxiety, but what they're offering their child is a lot of understanding of, I'm going to empathize with you, I'm going to hear you, but they get stuck there sometimes because they think nobody did that for me when I was growing up. And so what's happening is then the child is not learning to work through. Yeah. And so like that quote, when someone reminds them the truth of who they are, that's reminding them that they're capable, that they can defeat whatever's in front of them, that they've got this. I talk about in the book, but I have a friend who said that she wishes when she was growing up, her mom had said, you got this more than let me get this for you.
Yeah.
And we're seeing an epidemic of let me get this for you, which really means I don't trust you to do it for yourself, or I don't trust the world for you to be able to handle it. And so instead that we keep communicating a message like, trust you, you got this. And that's a piece of the trust. But the umbrella reason we can say is that we trust that. Like, I trust that God's got you, so I can trust you that you've got this, that ripple sense, and helping them get to that. And I met with a little girl. It was one of my favorite conversations I've had about 2 weeks ago. And she was talking about worry and literally said out loud to me, I think she's 7 years old, and she said, I worry a lot. And she said, the other day I was worrying about my grandparents because I love my grandparents so much. And she said, and I remembered the story about Jesus and the storm and the disciples in the boat, and that the disciples got worried and that Jesus said to them, where's your faith? And she said, I thought, I have faith and I'm okay. I mean, a kid said that to me. And I just thought, oh, I wish every child could grab a hold of that.
Yeah.
Because that, I mean, at least for me in the dailiness. So I'm not talking about diagnosable anxiety when we do really want to layer in a lot of different help from an emotional standpoint and all those things. But I think on a daily basis, my sense of trust and faith and believing that Jesus has me and he's got my good in his heart and he's moving towards that, I think can really change my level of worry. And so helping kids move back to that, that we trust them and we trust him in both places, I think can help them move towards a sense of trust in themselves and a faith that shores them up. Because, and I talk a lot about this in the book, but I feel like we're living in this juncture where kids' emotional lives and their spiritual lives don't meet as much as they used to in a way that I think is really tragic. And we want to help them get to something different.
So I think, if I could summarize what all that's so good. It sounds to me, correct me if I'm wrong, that the opportunity that we hold as ministry leaders is on two sides. It's one, it's putting a leader in the life of every kid who shows up consistently, who shows up predictably in a way that builds a bridge of trust with that kid.
Yeah.
So that when they're sitting in my circle, they see me and they know me and they trust me enough so that when I look at them and I say, you got this, they actually believe me.
Yeah. Right? I love that.
Right. But then as a ministry leader, being able to turn to the parent and say, you've got this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And what your child needs to hear more than anything right now is, you can do this.
Yeah.
I think for me, you know, as a ministry leader, that's the thing I think I get the most excited about because I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have all these letters on the other side of my name. You know what I mean? I don't know that I could counsel a parent through what to do and how to help their child through, you know, even persistent worry, right? I don't know that I'm equipped to do that. I don't know that I'm equipped to train an army of small group leaders to do that. But what I am equipped to do is to communicate to a small group leader the value and the power and the opportunity that they have to step in and have a significant influence in a kid's life, to be a voice in an elementary kid's life, to potentially be a voice that maybe they needed when they were in elementary school, you know?
Yeah.
And all it takes is them showing up and being present and, you know, and just sitting in that space with them, you know, and being caring enough to look at them and say, you got this. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's powerful.
That's great. You know, the other thing I appreciate in your book, Sissy, is the honesty you speak with. And I think the challenge you give us as leaders, as the church as a whole, you had a section in there called the New Prosperity Gospel, which I loved because it spoke to, you know, it's it used to be back in the day. It's like, you know, if you follow after Jesus and you'll get all the things your heart desires in terms of whatever it may be, riches and whatever. Mm-hmm. Whereas today is if you follow Jesus, it's, you know, all you'll be fine in terms of like, hey, don't worry about it. Just put your faith in God, you know, and you'll be, and you won't worry anymore to do that. And there's
and your life will look Instagram worthy.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah. I love your quote. You said there is good and life and light this side of heaven. Mm. And yes, there's also trouble. And kids, when they get to a certain age, and if they're honest, know it to be true, but they sure need us as the church to be honest with them.
Yeah.
And or their reality and their expectations will never match up in a way that brings hope. And I just, as we talk about Orange here, especially in this season where we're in, talking about it's personal and just being authentic and being transparent, I just feel like sometimes, like you said, let's stop pretending to live that Instagram-worthy life. Like, yeah, we've got it all together, and let's just be open and honest. And when kids open up, say, I'm worried, mm-hmm, scared, and it's just like, I got it. You know what? I am too. You know, as opposed to like, it's fine. You don't have to worry about that.
Just have faith.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. That's really good. Absolutely. This is, the conversation is exciting to me. Yeah. Again, because I think if we can have hope around this,
right,
I think that's the underlying, I don't know, that's the underlying motivation for me. I think, you know, to kind of bring this to a close and maybe get, you know, as practical as we can, I think right now some of the practical things we've talked about is, you know, there's some things that we can teach our small group leaders and as ministry leaders, there are some things that we can watch for that maybe help us to identify if a child might be struggling with this. And I think it's important to note, I mean, kids in general struggle with worry and anxiety, maybe not clinically, but some do, right? One of the points that you make in the book is there is a specific focus on girls because it can be masked so well.
Right.
You know, girls just are pros at masking it, you know? So I think there are things that we can do to help equip the people that that interact in our ministry, that interact with kids,
right,
to just have an eye for it. And as they recognize things, to come to us as ministry leaders and just and open the door and say, hey, here are some things I'm seeing that I think might be something to pay attention to. And from that, we can take some action steps and leaning in with some really intentional conversations with parents and have a healthy dialogue around that. Is there anything else of everything else that we've talked about, Sissy, is there anything else that you would say, gosh, if a ministry leader, somebody who's working with kids, if they could just do this one thing, it's going to make a difference. In fact, I think in the book you mentioned putting yourself out of a job. You know, I think your hope was this book will put you out of a job, right? Mm-hmm. What would you say to ministry leaders today? There's one thing you could do walking into Sunday morning that would make a difference and potentially put me out of job over time. What would that be?
You know, I mean, it would be a really practical thing, I think, because y'all have done a beautiful job of covering some of the spiritual aspects of it. But I think from a real practical sense, I think if we could teach kids to recognize that voice in their head, because for kids, whatever that voice is, for us as adults, that voice feels like truth.
That's good.
And so for a child who has a voice that says, you know, while you're at church, your mom could die or your dad or whatever it is they're afraid of, or you could get sick and throw up in front of everyone. I mean, those are some of the most common fears at different age levels that I hear kids attached to, that when you hear them say that out loud, if they do, or you just see them zone out and you know it's a child who's prone to worry, that I think if we could have a language when we work with kids where we name it, that we call it worry, or, you know, with kids specifically in counseling, I'll call it the worry monster or something like that.
Right.
But I think even when we call it worry, and maybe that, I mean, I think I wish every classroom that had kids in it or in any place we had kids, we had verses up about it. But to use that language where we can say, then what's worry saying to you right now? Or what's happening inside of you? Is worry trying to tell you something so that we start to name it? Because I think that takes away its power. And then we can point to, there's so many beautiful verses about worry. I mean, the one that I talk about so much in the verses in John about, in this, it's what you were saying before, Mike, in this world, you will have trouble, but take heart, I've overcome the world, that we don't have to worry because there's that sense of he has overcome. And so I think when we can start to name it, then we do have all these beautiful, rich, scripturally based tools that we can give back to with them where they feel stronger than their worry. Mm-hmm. But until we start to name it, it's not outside of them where they have that sense that they can fight it. And so that would be the biggest thing to me, I think, from a really practical standpoint, is that we can start talking about it in a way where they have more tools to go after it.
I love that. What is worry telling you right now? That is such a great question.
So good.
Thank you for that.
Good. Well, that's going to bring it to a close here. So, Sissy, thank you so much for hanging out with us today and sharing your insight and your wisdom to this subject of worry. And for our listeners out there, Sissy is a regular contributor to various podcasts and publications, including her own podcast, which is so good, called Raising Boys and Girls. You can find out more information and resources about that at raisingboysandgirls.com. So, Sissy, thanks for hanging out and making time for us today. Really do appreciate it.
Thanks for hanging out with me.
it's been so good. Thanks again for sharing all your insight. I know our listeners are going to be just, it's great. I got lots of notes here to do. So, and for our listeners out there, thanks so much for hanging out with us on this episode of the Orange Kids Podcast. And as always, if you've liked what you've heard and you want to hear more, make sure you subscribe to the podcast. And while you're there, leave us a rating and a review. It really does help spread the word about that. So until next time, thanks for hanging out, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Orange Kids Podcast. Gina, you going to take us out with a little ditty?
I had no ditty for you.
All right. Well, we tried. We're missing you, Kellen. All right. You guys take care.